had to pop on the theme from The Tick, the original cartoon version, which used the talents of David Osman many times, as well as Bug's Life and a lot of other places where he had provided voices. At the same time, I should say that Phil Proctor, too, has been associated both not just with Firesign Theater, but also individually with well-known films and working with famous actors like Robert De Niro and Orson Welles, as well as the Proctor and Bergman phase that came after the initial winding down. I don't know if we call it a breakup, but maybe it was a winding down of Firesign Theater before they would get back together again. So I'm going to pay it forward for 15 minutes so neither of our guests have to feel like they need to plug it again. We're going to, for 15 minutes, I'm going to buy the next 15 minutes by saying go to coasttocoastam.com and click on Firesign Theater's link to their website where you can get the new album, Dope Humor of the 70s. It's four sides, great material. Probably most of that hasn't been heard in 30 years by anybody. And you'll enjoy it, and you'll share it, and you'll understand what Firesign Theater meant both to comedy in America, why they're often referred to as the Beatles of comedy. I think they went into the Library of Congress being designated as the Beatles of comedy. And it wasn't just because there were four of them. I mean, they did the type of innovative album work, the studio album work that the Beatles did, and they set the standard for other people, which actually few could ever rise to. But they are part of a long history of satire in America, and we'll get back to that conversation next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. So again, thank you so much for this opportunity to talk with Phil Proctor and David Osman, the two remaining members of Firesign Theater. I was wondering if you would be willing each to give me one sentence in your, as you could sum up a memory, one sentence as I whip through some of your albums on what you remember about those albums or how you choose to think of them. Would you be willing?
Well, we can do that, Phil.
I think David, I think you still have more of your memory left than I do.
Well, I'll take the lead. I'll try to remember something.
Okay.
All right. First album, Waiting for the Electrician or Someone Like Him. What do you remember?
Hardly anything. No, that was 1967. We all met together. We didn't know the four of us. We sat in Peter Bergman's living room and wrote that album. To me, it is the essence of the moment of the '60s. It is the '60s album. It's about tiny Dr. Tim and acid and police and crossing borders and the indigenous Americans. I mean, it's everything is in that one album.
Excuse me, David, I have to interrupt. It basically also had on Beat the Reaper with it, which was
Beat the Reaper. Forgot about that.
Right, a prediction of a show, a television show, where people were injected with diseases, right?
Yes.
And if they could describe what the disease was, they would get an antidote, right? An antidote from the topless nurse, Judy.
That's so funny.
Right? And that album ended with Phil Austin getting injected with the plague. And he then tried to escape this crazy country he was in. And everybody ran up to him and said, touch me, because he was a celebrity.
Yeah, he was a carrier.
Right? All right, yeah. I'm going to give you another one. How can you be in two places at once when you're not anywhere at all? What do you remember?
The Marx Lennon album.
Oh, that's right, the cover.
Why, David?
What I remember about that album is Waiting to Go On at the Hilltop Theater in Tahunga, California, to play in front of an audience of 10 people, all of whom we were related to. in two places at once when you're not anywhere at all. And I said, Pete, it's too long.
And then we
went on stage.
And listen, on the marquee of that theater, it said, next week, the Marquis Chimps.
Yep, we were the last act in vaudeville.
Was it a, nobody knows.
Yep, last act in vaudeville. The next week, it was a chimpanzee act.
Yeah, a bunch of monkeys.
Yeah, we played with Fahrenheit 451.
Yeah, and we changed into our costumes in a barber shop down the street.
Next door to the theater. Yeah.
All right, don't crush that dwarf. Hand me the pliers. This is often considered the greatest recorded album of comedy ever.
Yep.
What do you remember?
Well, what do I remember? I remember television because I had come to Los Angeles from New York, where I was a theater actor doing musical comedies. And I saw a television in Los Angeles, which was absolutely out of the world. It wasn't anything like we had in New York. And there was this guy named Ralph Williams, whom I parodied as Ralph Spoilsport. Hiya, friends. Ralph Spoilsport, the world's largest used nude and nude lewd automobile ship. And blah blah, and basically, we all agreed that television was going to be the most influential effect on American society, and we did a show inspired by the Beatles, who did long form musical albums called A Day in the Life, where we portrayed characters who would go from one scene to the other by remote control. Click, click, click. And that was the inspiration for that album.
That's great.
Yeah, channel switching. Yeah.
Channel switching.
I think we're all bozos on this bus, 1971.
That title came from directly from the recording session. As so many things happened as we were in the studio recording a script we'd already written, lines were improvised all the time. So in the very beginning scene when the character that Phil Proctor is portraying gets on the bus to go to the Future Fair, Phil Austin says, I think we're all bozos on this bus. And that was just a line.
Right.
He improvised. And those of us who listened to it said, well, that's the title of the album.
How did you not get sued for that by Bozo the Clown, which, as I understand it, was a very litigious organization?
I had a correspondence with one of the bozos. I can't think of his name now, but he knew about us. They knew about us. We were no conflict. I think what happened with clowns at that point were the angry clowns, the horror clowns that came around at just the same period of time as the bozos. Hmm. And the bozos were not, they had funny round noses. They were not terrifying at all.
But Larry Harmon, I think his name was, and he owned the rights to Bozo the Clown. And I heard, for a brief period of time, when I was in college, I wrote a sketch and sold it to Bozo the Clown, and they performed it on Channel 9 in Chicago. And it was just, I was just going to see if I could do it, and I did it. But I remember, I didn't know him very well, but I heard a lot about him later on when I went to work for WGN, and I heard that was his main job, was suing people who used Bozo in a way which he felt could earn him some money. It didn't matter whether it actually did harm to the brand. He just wanted to make sure that anybody used that name, he got money for it.
Yeah, sure. Well, there. If he had sued us, there would have been a discovery process, and we would have pointed out to him that Bozo came directly from the 1933 Chicago World's Fair. It was the name of the bus that transported people around the fairgrounds.
Oh, interesting.
The Bozo. bozo bust. This is true.
I love that. I didn't know that.
Yep, that's true.
Awesome.
And guess what, Ian? Philip Proctor here. I didn't know that.
And it was your damn album.
Oh, see, he knew it, but
you
forgot it.
So much fun about Fireside Theater. Everything, you know, you have a name, Pundit. Well, that's like, you know, making puns, you know. Your name is, you have a name, Case, also in your past, right?
Right, yep.
Right? Yep. So, you know, what we have always played with is the slipperiness of names.
Oh, yeah.
You know, right? And what
right.
they connect to, if you really, you know, just kind of let that association happen in your mind. And the one thing about the, I think we're all bozos on this bus. Two things, actually. The word bus means, in computer language, a place where you can go to other connections in
right.
the computer, right?
Transfer, yeah.
Right. And that album was all about the upcoming revolution of the computer world. And for many years, although it apparently is not happening now, if you would call on your iPhone and say, "This is Worker speaking, hello," the Siri's voice would say to you, "Hello, Worker, what function can I perform for you, LOL?" Now, apparently, they've taken that down now.
I'm sorry to hear that. I saw that in a wiki thing about you or something, and I thought, oh, dang, I should try that out.
Yeah.
I forgot
why
to.
Why did it happen? It happened because Steve Jobs
was a fan
of ours. Okay? And he put that in as an homage to the Fireside Theater. Now, David and I, as he expressed, have done, you know, various animated voices for animated films. I'm probably best known as Howard on the Rugrats.
Yes.
To your listeners.
Yes.
Okay, Howard, because everybody's grown up with Howard, you know, the father of Phil and Lil on the Rugrats. But the fact is that when I met Steve Jobs at the opening of A Bug's Life at the fan, anyway, where all of us met him.
Comic-Con?
He said to me, "I'm a big fan of yours."
That's great.
Okay, and it turns out he was, because we found pictures of him back in the 70s coming to a record signing
in
Berkeley.
I love that.
I do, too. I mean, it's so heartwarming and so beautiful.
Peter was an Apple fellow.
Yeah, that's right. Peter became an Apple fellow.
He had everything new, and it came right to Peter. And it was very cool that we had that relationship. I should say that the character that Phil Proctor played in, I think, Roll Bozos on this bus, was the first computer hacker.
Yeah, I hacked the computer, and I planted a virus in the computer. Okay, my character was named a Clem. Okay?
Oh, yes.
Listen, guys, whoever is listening to this, if you don't know who we are, go to firesuntheater.com, and you will be absolutely not only entertained, but enlightened at how amazing our futuristic understanding was. Because what the Fireside Theater did, as you know, Ian, was that we predicted things that were going to happen in the society, right, that were going to transform us. And, you know, we can't do any satire now because the administration is too surrealistic for even us to embrace.
Well, that reminds me of a tweet a guy named Jim Wellington wrote. He said, "You got to ask him, where is a Clem?" And he says, "Now that we really need somebody to break the sitting president." But That's just what he said. I have other things I want to ask you, so hang on. I do want to say, though, you reminded me that something of Harry Shearer said about you, which I think is worthy of pointing out about Firesign Theater, and how he felt, he thought credibility gap and you all were different in this one way, and this is how he described it. He said that you captured the zeitgeist of the era, but that he said that this was a matter of you guys were satirizing the culture while they were satirizing the news. And yep. I thought that that's an interesting way of looking at it.
Yep, yep. I think that's absolutely accurate. David?
Yes, I do too. Because it did come out of the news group at the radio station.
And yeah, right. I remember.
I think that's exactly right. But there are a couple of things about Harry that he was never not on the radio because he was doing his own radio show. I mean, always. I've used him as an actor many times in our productions.
Oh, great.
Because he could do any voice you'd ask him to do. I only know one other actor who can do that, and that's Mr. Proctor.
Oh,
right.
Whom I also hired.
Thank you very much, you stupid fool.
All right, so that brings me to, before we get to the bottom of the hour and I have to give you up to the phones, I want to ask you about a couple other album titles. I'm going to ask you the album title. You tell me what you remember or how you remember it. Anyway, Everything You Know Is Wrong.
That's you.
Well, sort of. But, I mean, what do you remember about the making of it? Where were you guys as a group by that point? You'd already had, you know, this is like your 10th album or something. So how were you doing as four men working together toward a common goal still?
We had come out of doing Sherlock Holmes parody, satire, which was also, you know, contemporary politics. Had a lot to do with cocaine, which had a lot to do with what was going on in Hollywood at the time we did that. That was 74.
Is that the Tale of the Giant Rat of Sumatra?
Rat of Sumatra. Now, but that was not considered to be by our fan club, who was getting older and older. That wasn't considered a real Firesign album. So. You know, because it wasn't about television, for one thing.
Right.
And it wasn't about popular culture. It was a historical album. So when we did the next year's album, we decided that we would do a more of a Fireside Theater kind of album with characters, comic characters that were out of, right off the radio, literally off the radio.
Right, right. And then finally, the last one I think I have time for before we get to the bottom of the hour, your recollections on In the Next World, You're on Your Own.
Oh, now I'm going to start that by saying that was the point where Proctor and Bergman had decided to go on the road to promote the Firesign Theater, while David and Phil wanted us to do more studio albums, okay? And
right.
So the beauty of the Firesign Theater, from my perspective, is that we were able to create both things in our works, so that Peter and I went out and created Proctor and Bergman. We did our own albums. We had an interesting connection with people in Canada and the United States, and Phil and David worked together doing another kind of physical presentation, and then this album was created, and we were invited back to participate in it. So, David, tell me more.
I think, did we just lose? I heard a click.
What?
We just lost him at that crucial moment where you called to him.
Oh, well, at least he's not dead yet.
Oh, yeah. Well, let's hope. And let's hope that wasn't out of anger for going over that memory of when you guys were out on the road.
Yeah. So
Well, let me ask you this. Which one, give me 30 seconds on which one do you think is your Sergeant Pepper's?
Oh, well, I think that's Don't Crush That Dwarf, Hand Me the Pliers, which the Library of Congress also recognized as having a social effect on the country.
Yeah, I'd have to agree that that was the peak album in our time at the moment, and it has lasted for 50 years. It's a 50-year-old album. No, I mean that you'd have to be. If this was 50 years ago, you'd be interviewing Al Jolson.
Yeah, Rudy Valley. All right, hang on a second. We'll come back to this, and then we'll give the number so that everybody can join the conversation with what's left of Fireside Theater. Find out more. Order the album. Go to firesigntheater.com. Link up to them through coasttocoastam.com. The album is coming out. Dope Humor of the 70s. You're going to love it. This is Ian Punnett. You know, I think I saw a clip somebody sent me. I think it was David Osman doing a Beatles medley somewhere on guitar. I think that was him, or somebody claiming to be him. Firesign Theater's new album is out. You can link up to Phil Proctor and David Osman through their website, firesigntheater.com, easily found at coasttocoastam.com. And if you go there, then be ready, because this LP is coming out. So if you're going to buy it for somebody for the holidays coming up, just remember they have to have, you know, an actual turntable with a working tone arm and all that. And, of course, just in case, maybe a nickel with some Scotch tape to go on that tone arm, just to make sure it doesn't skip. You remember. Anyway, the Dope Humor of the 70s is a four-side collection of stuff which you probably have never heard of. I don't think I have heard. 83 minutes previously uncollected funny bits from Firesign Theater's years, the Dear Friends years, and we've been enjoying this conversation with them, but now it's your turn. Please do jump in at coasttocoastam.com. If you don't know the numbers, we'll give them to you again for open lines on the way, but here's your chance to talk to them. Your comments, your questions for what's left of Firesign Theater next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Phil and David, if you're ready, we'll roll, but I want to give a shout-out to famous Chicago radio personality Fred Winston, who's listening apparently right now, who wanted to credit you with being an inspiration for him, which is a high compliment because he was wonderfully absurd on the air often on WCFL in Chicago. West of the Rockies, Brad is in Fresno. For Phil and David of Firesign Theater. Go ahead, Brad.
Hi, I'm so excited I got through. I've been listening to the Firesign Theater since 69 or 70. When I heard the Don't Crush That Dwarf, Henry the Plowers, I was at a friend's one time. I was the only one there. I laid down and listened to it, and I got a message at the end of the album to play it again using like a code that I developed or had. I listened to the album again, and I subsequently had an out-of-body experience. And this is like the most profound thing that's ever happened to me in my entire life. Shortly after, I saw Phil Austin's phone number in the phone book and called him. I don't know if he ever told you guys about this, but I called him and told him what happened, and I was kind of nervous at the time. He says, "Are you all right?" And I says, "Well, yeah, I just wanted to know what happened to me. What is this all about?" And he was unable to really explain the whole process of what happened. But somehow, through your comedy and truth and the way it affected me, was I had an out-of-body experience. And the only way I can explain it is that I met two other parts of myself. There was three of us as a whole.
Oh, wait. I got to jump in. I mean, it's very interesting, but this is without drugs, right?
Correct, yes. I was into drugs at the time, but I was sober as a doornail.
I trust you. So go ahead. You got your guys here. Let's get a reflection on that. Go ahead.
Okay, this is Phil speaking first. You know, I really understand, Brad, what you're talking about, because what we were trying to do with our albums was to stimulate people's brains. We did it through what we called movies in the mind. But we were basically, our albums, if you listen to them, are very associative. They work the way the brain works, you know, with associations to things that are not always completely clear. And so we may have stimulated your mind, right, to make you kind of feel, I don't know what to say, that you were more powerful than you thought you were, and that you could become objective to your own behavior and make the proper decisions about your path in life. Have you had a good life?
Well, unfortunately, you know, these were the days when I was taking acid, and unfortunately, after it took place, I picked up the album and looked at you guys' pictures, and it's like I knew who you were. It's like we were like all buddies in a sense. But anyway, shortly after, I had two friends come over to the house, and they just brought back a bunch of acid. And I said, well, you know, I tried to explain what happened to them, and I said, I don't think I need to take it anymore after this experience. And they kept saying, well, you know, it would probably just enhance it, wouldn't it? I said, no, I don't think so. And just over throughout debate, I decided to do it just to placate them, to prove that it wouldn't happen. And it was probably the worst experience that I've ever had. I felt like there was a wall that came down in front of me, and I turned, and another wall came down, and then another wall came down, and I was trapped inside this three-walled cell.
Well, Brad, I want to get some other people on, but David, did you have a quick thought?
Well, no, I think that I do actually remember Phil mentioning your phone call, and it would have been the first thing he would have said was, are you all right?
Yeah.
That's the first thing Phil Austin would have asked, is, are you all right? That was who Phil was. So it's a great experience. It's called triggering, you know?
Yeah.
It's called triggering.
East of the Rockies, Greg is in Temple, Texas on Coast to Coast AM. Try and get as many fans in as I can before the top of the hour with what's left of Firesign Theater. Go ahead, Greg.
Yeah, for 77, 78, I was going to Northeastern Illinois University in Chicago on a GI Bill. And there was a professor there, and I think his last name was McDonald. I don't know whether you gentlemen know who that is or not. But I took the Golden Age of Radio class with him as an elective. And he would dim down the lecture hall and play, I think he played one of your recordings at the time. I think everybody was in stitches at the recording.
Yeah.
But my question has to do with, and I guess I can answer it sometimes, because you can't do stuff on the radio today that you could way back when for fear of offending people unless you put out some sort of a disclaimer first. But I'm just wondering why they can't replay stuff done by Arch Obler, if you know that name.
Oh, sure.
Theater of the Mind. I mean, I've been looking for The Man Who Turned Inside Out and The Man Who Went Into the Wall for 40 years now, trying to find those recordings.
Very interesting.
Ian,
go ahead, guys.
Arch Obler maybe
David's talking, but then I'll add my idea.
Okay, go ahead. David?
Well, I think, Ian, do you know whether Arch Obler is accessible?
I don't know that. In fact, it's funny because I do remember the name, and I had to quickly check to see where he is on that. So I'll wiki him real quick while you're talking. But Phil, you had a thought?
Yeah, sure. There are many places online where you can connect with the old radio shows. Arch Obler was a radio producer, writer, director like Norman Corwin, whom David and I know very well.
Oh, yeah, I love his stuff,
Who created, I think, kind of like horror shows.
Yeah, that was,
on the radio.
His main thing.
And there are many places you can go for old time radio, OTR. And David and I have performed at many conventions of old time radio fans, like Reps, which David just did a piece for, which is called the Radio
Enthusiasts of Puget Sound.
Right, the Radio Enthusiasts.
Well, it used to be that the quote old time radio stars were still living.
Yeah.
And fortunately, we are still living, and now we're the old time radio stars.
Yes, we are.
Yeah.
There's another thing called Spurred Vac.
Yeah, in Los Angeles.
Spurred Vac. Spurred Vac, and you'll find all kinds of connections to great old radio shows.
Are you sure that's not pungent sound? Are you sure it was Puget?
Pungent sound. You see, your
only
name
when the
is,
whales
is
wash
Punnett.
Up on the beach.
Your name is Punnett.
Yes, it is.
You have to make a pun.
I do on occasion. Here, by the way, I found it. So it's zootradio.com. Zoot, Z-O-O-T, zootradio.com, Audio Museum, and they have all the free old-time radio downloads of Arch Obler's plays and shows.
Hey, thank you. There you go.
Great.
How about that? All right, so let's go to Joe in Pennsylvania on a wild card line. Joe?
Hi, Ian. Hi, Phil. Hi, Dave.
Hi.
We grew up very poor. I was born in 54, and when I was 8 months old, drunk drivers killed my father.
Oh.
So we knew a maintenance man in the B'nai B'rith. When somebody would move out or pass away, he would get some really good records and bring them to us.
Oh.
Well, we got a comedy record, and we weren't very sophisticated, never thought to look on the label of the name of the album or who the artist was. There was an artist, I'm not sure how old the record was either. One of the records we got was hilarious, and the guy was a bit of a loser. He'd do a lot of short gags, and at the end of every joke, he would say, "You know what I mean, Bunky? Can you tell me the name of the artist?"
Oh.
Yeah. So this is the thing, it's on, this is definitely old-timey radio. You're talking about the guy who would come on and say, "Do you find yourself feeling tired? Is that the kind of thing you're talking about? Do these little monologues? Well, do you, Bunky?" And then they would go into some, like, John Philip Sousa piece or something, and then he would talk over it.
That's the guy. Both Jews and I are trying to remember his name.
Yeah. Let me see if I can't figure that out before the top of the hour. But in the meantime, let me grab Bill, who's in Los Angeles, for David and Phil of Firesign Theater. Go ahead, Bill.
Yes, you're referring to Eddie the Old Philosopher Lawrence.
That's it.
Yeah, yep. That's
there
right.
There you go, Eddie
Lawrence.
Yep.
Got it.
Yep.
Thank you.
I ever wonder what's going to – is that what's like, Bunky? Yeah.
Right,
yeah,
that guy.
Yep. You know where I'm, Bunky? Yeah.
Right.
You know, I have to say, before we talk to you about your question, that we were – obviously influenced by many of these very, very funny people, because at the time they were doing everything that they did on phonograph records.
Right.
Okay? And now, you know, you could download dope humor of the 70s from stand-up records. Right? Okay?
That was sneaky.
And Ian, you'll get a PDF with all kinds of original material and stories that we told about it. But when we were growing up, just like our caller and you, we listened to records, and they had a great influence on us, and they made us laugh, and and we could share it with other people, and that's how Firesign Theater became famous.
Bill, what's your question for the guys?
It's the magic of radio, my friends. And the thing that I just wanted to point out, on the iPhone, you can still ask an iPhone a question. The question is, why does the porridge bird lay its egg in the air? And the pirates and the phone will answer, "Ha ha, I don't know the answer to that, but you can't shut me down that easily." it still does that.
It still does that function.
Yeah.
That's great.
And that, again, is, as job, I said, is a direct homage by Steve Jobs, who was a fan of ours.
Yeah.
And it really makes my heart quivel to think about that.
Love that. Let me get to wildcard line. Chris is in Tulsa, Oklahoma on Coast to Coast. Chris?
Hey, guys. Great to hear from you.
Thank you.
It's great to be here still.
Hey, how about this album, Roller Maidens from Outer Space?
Yeah, that was Phil Austin's solo album.
Yep.
There were other people on the album with him. He did that. We each of us, Proctor and Bergman, did an album called TV or Not TV.
I did an
album called How Time Flies. And
yes.
and Phil Austin did Roller Maidens from Outer Space, which is a truly, truly amazing record in which I think he sings four or five songs.
Yep.
It happens in between the channels on television.
Hey, you know something? The fact that Peter and I decided to go out and tour to promote Fire Sign Theater led in a very interesting way to the energy that led to these two other wonderful albums from the Fire Sign Theater. And you know something? I don't think there's any other group in the history of comedy that has been able to, you know, to continue.
That's
under
true.
These circumstances. Right, David?
Well, we're just filling out the earliest years of Firesign right now. When you go through those record album titles, those were the first nine albums from Columbia Records, and were best known for the first three of them, which came out 50 years ago or more.
Yeah.
The fact that they're still in print is amazing to us,
right.
That we are still popular in that way, in sales way. But that period of time that we were talking about, when comedy on the radio was free, and you could say virtually anything you wanted. I mean, you still could use four-letter words on the air, but you didn't have to. That was stupid. You could just be, you could be as funny as you could be. And that all ended because of commercials, really. See, KRLA, when we were on, had commercials, but the commercials, the money went to found the L.A. public television station.
Right.
And that's the history of FAM, you know, that's part of it, is that for a moment that station was actually benefiting the public in the city of Los Angeles. So we were part of that, you know.
What's interesting about that, too, and it's why, even though I love being part of a syndicated product, I just think that regionalism of radio is just largely gone, and I know why, and it everything evolves for the better or for worse, but I love that period of time when you could not hear LA radio unless you were in LA. You couldn't hear that distinct spin on R&B that they had in the Carolinas unless you were in the Carolinas. You couldn't hear that Chicago sound unless you were in Chicago. And I think that that's kind of the beauty of that regionalism, is it gave a flavor to communities in more than just what was being sold, you know, on the, you know, for street food or dances or whatever. And I think that's so much the pleasure of having a chance to talk to you. I'm out of time. But I know that I will turn again to saying, for people that want to hear more, Phil and David, and in spirit, the rest of the guys, Peter and the other Phil, are there on the Firesign Theater website, firesigntheater.com, where you can get this new album. 10 seconds to say goodbye to all of your fans. We'll go Phil first.
Hey, phil.proctor@mac.com. Come on.
I like that. Come on. David? Got to be quick.
I love you all. Thank you for being with us all these years. Thank you.
You made it very special. I really enjoyed this. Thank you so much. And get ready. We'll go open lines coming up next. We'll plunge these and we'll get to you on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett.